Well, greetings and hello. Welcome to Take Two with Jerry and Debbie on EWTN Radio. I am Jerry Usher along with my co-host Debbie Giorgiani, the show team in place. But this is not a live show today. We are presenting a pre-record for you here on Take Two with Jerry and Debbie. And Debbie, I know it's one that our listeners are going to gain a lot from. We have had our guest today on with us in the past, always very, very popular programs. And we're going to be talking about some very important spiritual realities.
He's written another book, Jerry, and it's, wow, I mean, he's on a roll with it, and it's amazing. Our dear friend and religious demonologist, Adam Bly, is with us in his new book that's coming out September of this year, 2022, The Exorcism Files, True Stories of Demonic Possession. Wow, that's a very, very deep title.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, excuse me. Adam's primary work is for the Catholic Diocese of Pittsburgh. He works in the Chancery and the Tribunal, and he is a Peritus, Catholic Church Decreed expert on religious demonology and exorcism, and currently studying canon law as well. You mentioned his most recent book. He's had other books as well, and he does speaking events. We can tell you how to bring Adam out as a speaker, and he also does work with EWTN. He's been on a number of shows and also on the Station of the Cross. Adam, welcome back to Take Two. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, thank you. It's wonderful to be back.
Adam, you wrote this book. Why now? Why do you feel the need for us to read this book? What age groups should be reading it? What should we walk away with a better understanding? What should we be concerned about? You know, kind of share like the behind the scenes when you were processing, actually coming together with the, you know, how to really present this to us.
Well, Debbie, the book came out of a lot of reflection on the fact that we have very little catechesis these days, and the public is often not well informed by the church, and the secular society actually encourages a lot of the things that the church had always forbidden and scripture had forbidden. And so, you know, we're kind of in a strange situation where, as a Western Christian culture primarily, we're now kind of promoting things that are dangerous. And so the point of the book wasn't really to be, it's not at all to be scary or to just exploit the idea of exorcism, because people are always interested in that, but it's to tell teaching stories, real stories that illustrate why we want to avoid these problems. Because as you know, none of us like to hear, don't do that. We as humans, we tend to rebel against that, and we want to go try it for ourselves. And so I knew that that wouldn't work well. So I wanted to share stories in a way that isn't overly scary, but is sobering, to try to teach those lessons.
Yeah, Adam, I'm curious to know, in your experience, you know, are people kind of, I wanted to use the word dabbling, but I think people are doing a lot more than dabbling into dangerous spiritual things nowadays. I was in the grocery store yesterday, and a gentleman was shopping, and he had, kind of a wristband. It wasn't a watch, but it had the pentagram on there, and he was tattooed all over with these demonic symbols and stuff. And I just thought, I don't know if he knows really the extent of what he's kind of promoting and getting himself into. Is there a lot more of that going on, do you think?
Yeah, I do think so, because I think the large and the small screen, the movies and the television shows for a few decades now have been kind of promoting the idea that these things are empowering, and, you know, sometimes they'll exploit the idea of feminism to promote witchcraft, and, whereas the origin of modern witchcraft was anything but feminist. And so, yeah, I think people, to an extent, sometimes use it as just something to be shocking or scary to other people as a cultural thing, like taking on that identity, like dressing all in black or something without any real spirituality behind it. But then, you know, somebody like that, if they had demonic tattoos on them and they're wearing a pentagram, there's a good chance that they're dabbling in black magic, yeah. And based on the cases we see over time, and we're seeing a little bit more of the people that have gotten into that and get burned and want to get out of it. So unfortunately, yeah, Jerry, I do think it's more common.
Adam, we really appreciated your previous book, The Catholic Guide to Miracles, also published by Sophia Institute Press. And this one is that's coming out is Sophia Institute is doing it as well. And that's wonderful. Catholic Guide to Miracles, I think, really helped people to understand the authentic from those that, you know, maybe are out there that are counterfeit, like you said in the subtitle there. So that really helped us. That really educated us. In this book, I mean, is there anything that's going to kind of make us, I don't know, uneasy?
Well, I think for most people, when they confront the idea of these evil spirits and they confront the reality of that and consider the possibility that it's real, a lot of people, because they're not catechized and they don't realize that, you know, these things are all under control. Jesus is in charge of them. He has the leash, and he's the one that has to give them license to do what they do. And that's a complex thing to explain to people. And so they kind of imagine what they see in the movies, and they just say, oh my gosh, if this is really real, then these random, you know, bad things are going to happen to me just out of the blue. And the point of the book is that that's not the case. The point of the book is to empower you with an understanding of how it all works, and God's central role in it, that God, out of love for us, honors our free will and allows us to choose good or bad, and then we bear the weight of those choices. So if we choose evil and we choose a relationship with the evil spirits, God then backs off and allows us to experience that, not because he's mean and wants us to suffer, but he wants us to see what our choice is, so that hopefully we turn back to him in love. And so I think, in a sense, yes, the book could be unsettling for people because it's about a reality that we don't talk about much in the church now. However, it should be empowering if you really reflect on what's there.
Very good. Adam Bly is our guest. He is a religious demonologist, works for the Diocese of Pittsburgh, among many other things. He is an author. He is a speaker. If you would like to bring him out to speak in your area, you can go to religiousdemonology.com, religiousdemonology.com. We're talking with him about his forthcoming book, The Exorcism Files, True Stories of Demonic Possession. It is a pre-recorded episode today of Take Two with Jerry and Debbie right here on EWTN Radio. Thanks for being with us on Take Two with Jerry and Debbie on EWTN Radio. Jerry Usher with Debbie Giorgiani. It is a pre-recorded episode of the program today. We're not taking your live calls, but we do believe that what is being presented with our guest Adam Bly is of significant interest to you, especially because we're talking about spiritual realities that, as Adam has pointed out, we all need to know about, be aware of, be cautious of, but not be afraid of, and really kind of basing this conversation on his new book, the forthcoming book, The Exorcism Files, True Stories of Demonic Possession. And Adam, one thing I would like to ask you about is we are looking at our culture today, and you know, so much of it just seems to be, there's so much rage and hatred and violence and anger. It just seems like that is all that we see about, hear about on the news and so forth. Obviously, this is human nature at work. We know that, and I know you'd be the first to say that. But is there any sense that some of this might be driven, you know, by demonic influences in any way at all?
I mean, that's such a tricky thing, Jerry, because we want to be careful about going to the towards that extreme of, you know, the devil's behind every bush and is behind everything. And what that also does is it kind of takes away the human responsibility. You know, if somebody's feeling like, well, you know, the demonic's so active in the world and that's an excuse for my behavior, I was overcome by something external. And really, we need to be grounded in a sense of responsibility for our own choices and our own actions. However, you know, like I think part of what we were saying before is the culture has become less Christian in a sense in terms of the laws and the way we approach things in terms of a charitable approach to discussion versus kind of a fight where, you know, through threats or violence or intimidation, somebody's views can be pushed onto another person. And it seems to me, I'm not an expert in political history, but it seems to me that's a shift in our Western culture that used to be about open dialogue, and then the best ideas through the discussion and debate would prevail. And I think we've switched to a position where kind of it's a mob rule thing, where if enough people attack you, you become suppressed just because the group has decided to push you, or an individual has called for the community to kind of silence a person. So yeah, it's unfortunately, the demonic certainly would want, I know them well enough to say they would certainly want to play a role in division. The original Greek diabolos is the divider. And so when we see division, when we see breaking up of the family, when we see breaking up of the community, the polarizing of political views in order to get people to turn on each other, in a sense, that's, you know, from a very classic ancient perspective, that's exactly what the demon does. When humans work together in peace and tolerance of each other and provide mutual support, that's when families and culture and society flourishes. And the devil wants to break that down and cause us to turn against each other. So in that very broad sense, I would say it's demonic.
Okay.
This is very, very deep, very interesting stuff. We all need to hear it. Adam, let me ask you this question. How come we're not hearing more of this from the pulpit? You know, why aren't we hearing more homilies addressing this so that we can all become better, you know, formed in this and in what to look for, what to be aware of? The last time I heard a homily addressing any of this had to have been at least, I think, 6 or 7 or maybe 8, maybe even 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm. I think that varies diocese to diocese, Debbie, and priest to priest. But in general, there's a few things that contribute to that. So first off, there's very little or fairly often no training whatsoever in seminary on these topics anymore. I have increasingly been asked to come to seminaries and do workshops where I'll teach, you know, everybody in the seminary at a particular moment and just spend an afternoon giving them the basics. And I'm very grateful for that. So there's a little bit of a change there, but primarily the priests that are out there now, they had zero information given to them about this, so they don't really know how to preach about it. And secondly, I think it's an unpopular topic because it's not kind of a feel-good topic. It's kind of a topic that touches on, you know, the last things, heaven, hell, purgatory, you know, the idea of judgment, the idea that there's evil in the world pulling us away from God, and we need to fight that. And in fact, the entire Christian life is spiritual warfare. Those ideas maybe aren't as attractive to the average person because it touches on, you know, things that make us feel uneasy. And so maybe it's less attractive to preach about because it might, you know, cause a negative reaction in some people that don't want to hear about that. That could be part of it too. So yeah, it varies, Debbie, but I think the primary thing is that most priests are not well trained in this at all.
Hey, real quick, don't miss the World Over email, the latest political and cultural reporting and analysis on topics of interest to Catholics and people of faith on the World Over with Raymond Arroyo. And get news from the World Over in your email inbox every week. Sign up today. Visit EWTN.com and click on subscribe. Visiting today on Take Two with Jerry and Debbie with Adam Bly. He is the author of several books, including the forthcoming book, The Exorcism Files, True Stories of Demonic Possession, and that is being published by Sophia Institute Press. You will find them at sophiainstitute.com. Just do a search for the book, The Exorcism Files, True Stories of Demonic Possession. And if you want to take us, Adam, inside the pages of the book, just give us sort of, first of all, the 38,000-foot view of how this is going to be beneficial to the average reader, and then maybe we can, you know, dive a little bit deeper into some of the chapters that you wrote.
Sure. So I kind of spend the beginning of the book explaining what exorcism is, what it isn't, the history of it, how it, you know, how it's been formed and changed in the church over time and where it is today. It's important to understand that because most people only see the movies and the TV shows and they kind of assume that that's the truth. And it really doesn't work the way you see in the movies. And then I try to trace the history of spiritualism, which in its modern form, I think is the number one danger in our culture. And that's essentially ghost hunting and playing with spirit communication. And there's a significant history to that, that we kind of, it's helpful to understand how much deception is behind that and how much, in a sense, human greed and just human deception in addition to the spiritual. And then the third area that's, I think, important is Wicca and witchcraft and black magic in general. So I would say the number two thing after spirit communication and ghost hunting is black magic being normalized and celebrated, and particularly Wicca is the most popular form of that. So knowing the real history of Wicca, that it's not an ancient pre-Christian religion, it doesn't have that kind of pedigree, that it essentially was made up by a British guy back in the 60s and 70s who was playing around and combining a bunch of different ideas, the main of which was completely discounted by the academic community as being made up. So, you know, kind of looking at the real history of these things is important, and then seeing how the modern version that's fed to people is very different than the actual history of it. And then throughout it, I give example cases of, with, you know, changing names, locations, and everything identifiable to protect people. But, you know, real cases of people that have dabbled in various forms of these things and what happened to them and how they were freed from it. And so it's not just about saying, oh, these things are bad, don't do them again, but to say, you know, here's some examples of people that went down these roads and exactly what happened to them.
I have all your books. I proudly will say that. And I absolutely love your last book, The Catholic Guide to Miracles. I am definitely getting this book. But Adam, just because we have the Take-Two family, we've been broadcasting Take-Two with Jerry and Debbie for 7 years now, and we kind of know the Take-Two family. So somebody gets your book, they read it. What's the remedy if they have fallen into these traps, if they've gone in this direction? What should they do? Where should they go first? I know we've said it before, but maybe put together kind of a step-by-step. If somebody's, you know, they get done, they finish reading your book, they put it down, and they say, oh no, I'm in trouble. What do they do? Mm-hmm. Where do they go?
Yeah, so the first thing is don't panic. So I've had many people, like after a talk, come up in a fluster saying, I played with the Ouija board when I was 12 and, you know, now I'm afraid I'm possessed or something. So number one is don't panic. Number two is if you're a Catholic Christian, take advantage of the sacrament of confession. And, you know, if you've been seriously involved in black magic in some way, you know, actual spell work, where maybe people got harmed or you made any kind of commitments, it may be good to make an appointment and talk it through with your priest, you know, and discuss it in addition to confession, because you may want some deliverance prayers in addition to confession. But, you know, if it was a minor thing and it happened a long time ago and you're not having any unusual symptoms or circumstances that are going on, you're probably fine and just confess it. If you've got things that you think are, you know, kind of oppression or some spiritual attack on you or your life, then talk with your priest if you're a Catholic Christian and ask for some deliverance prayer in addition to confession. And if you're a Christian, not a Catholic Christian, you don't have the sacrament of penance, then repent as best you can between you and Jesus. Work with your minister, your spiritual leader on that. And that's the most important thing, Debbie, is closing that door. And you close that door through an act of the will. And that act of the will is to say, God, I'm sorry, and I'm not going to do this again, essentially. And so that would be the biggest step. And then, you know, additional prayers may be needed depending on what was done. And work with your local spiritual leader is the most important kind of part of that journey. It's really a pastoral process. It's not about, you know, I need the special magic hammer of exorcism and that's going to take my problem away. It's actually much more about a pastoral process of informing your conscience, which this book can do, and then working with your local spiritual leader to basically work through that, you know, that process of healing.
We are visiting with religious demonologist and author Adam Bly. Of course, his primary work, we mentioned before, is for the Catholic Diocese of Pittsburgh in the Chancery and the Tribunal. He is also a Catholic Church Decreed expert on religious demonology and exorcism. He is studying canon law and gives a lot of presentations around the world to lay groups, to priests. He trains priests in the Church's rite of exorcism and gives presentations to seminarians as well. And, you know, Adam, we see a lot of this stuff, like evil and demons and the devil and all this, presented in movies and in other sort of fantastical ways like that. In your own experience, though, I mean, are you, I imagine you have seen some things, you know, that would make the common person probably want to turn and, you know, head for the nearest door. Are you at liberty to share with any of the phenomena that you've experienced, especially in the times that you've been involved in solemn exorcisms?
Oh, I mean, you know, people always want to hear about the scariest thing that you've seen or experienced, and you actually don't, because there's some things that are too much, and they could kind of wound your imagination, and it's not good to share them. But, you know, little things that kind of can't be explained away, you know, something as simple as somebody spitting nails for 45 minutes or an hour, you know, until there's 30, 60 nails on the floor, but there was no nails hidden in their mouth. They don't have a chance to sneak them into their mouth. They're not regurgitating them. So, you know, that kind of thing of producing metal out of nowhere, reciting people's secret sins, that's something that does once in a while happen, or just embarrassing things from your past that nobody else knows about. We just had that happen recently here when somebody knew that was coming in for training. They do that to rattle people and scare them off. So, yeah, and I've, you know, we've had things fly around the room once in a while. Just, you know, basically, it's all parlor tricks. It's all just distraction, and it's not a big deal. But I understand, Jerry. Like, I guess I've been doing this so many years that to me it's just kind of normal, and I shrug. But I guess to the average person, if they saw that actually happen and realized, like, oh, I, you know, that's not just made up. I can't explain that away. It would be a conversion experience. Would be the positive way to look at it, Jerry. And that's what. That's what we see with people that get into the exorcism ministry. When the priests get assigned to this and they see it, and then they start realizing, like, oh, this is really real. This isn't just mental illness. This isn't schizophrenia. It's not epilepsy. And they realize that everything's real. The gospel's real. Those stories are real. They're doing and saying the same things they said 2,000 years ago. And Jesus is just as in charge today as he was in those stories from 2,000 years ago, and just as present for us. So it's a very positive thing in the end, because it's a conversion experience. It's not so much about being afraid.
Well, Adam, I have to tell you, Jerry and I, we're so grateful to you for the work that you do. We really believe God has equipped you for this work. It's very unique. It's not for everybody. And blessings to you, prayers going, heading your way always. We love your books. We love everything that you produce, and keep doing it. I mean, we need to hear this stuff, and we're not necessarily going to hear it in the religious education classroom, or even sometimes at Mass. So, Adam, thank you for the fine work that you do in this area.
Oh, thank you, Debbie, and it's all Jesus. I don't deserve any credit. I only get credit for the errors, but yeah, but thank you for saying that.
Very good. I mentioned you can book Adam for a speaking engagement. Just go to religiousdemonology.com and click on the speaking tab, and you can bring Adam out to your church, your parish, your mission, your retreat, what have you. We want to thank you, Adam, for being on with us here on Take Two with Jerry and Debbie on this very special pre-recorded broadcast of the program. So good to have you with us on Take Two with Jerry and Debbie on EWTN Radio. Jerry Usher here along with Debbie Giorgiani, and we are going to ask you to not call right now because this is a pre-recorded program that we are presenting to you today, and it is going to be, I think, one that you will come away with a lot of helpful information and insights about some of the deeper realities of the spiritual life. Our good friend Adam Bly is joining us. He has a Master's of Science from Penn State in Adult Clinical Psychology. He has done psychological work in community and forensic settings. He's a paritus, meaning an expert of religious demonology and exorcism for the Diocese of Pittsburgh. He trains priests in exorcism on a national level, and Adam is an auxiliary member of the International Association of Exorcists. And we're going to be talking about a new book that he has coming out. And Debbie, I know you're very excited about this.
Oh, I am. And that's why we wanted to highlight this amazing book that's coming out in September of this year, 2022, because our Take Two family, we just absolutely love Adam's work, and we've been following Adam, and we're so happy to have him with us. So welcome to Take Two, Adam.
Oh, thank you, guys. It's nice to be here again.
Yeah, your book, I mean, tell us a little bit about it. Okay, so the name of it is The Exorcism Files, True Stories of Demonic Possession. It's coming out in September of 2022, and tell us, because we loved your last book, The Catholic Guide to Miracles, Separating the Authentic from the Counterfeit. And Adam, you are just on a roll here with being able to disclose to all of us what really happens, you know, in these encounters of oppression or possession. So go into a little bit of the background and why you felt the need to write this book and to get it out there for us to have, you know, the signs and so we can be made aware of things.
Well, Debbie, the purpose is to share stories that teach lessons. It's not just to have a book of scary stories. I don't think that serves any good purpose. But what this is trying to do is share the things that we see in real cases through the years that have caused people problems and tell the story of the case, not just, you know, not just gory details of the exorcism. I don't get into that very much at all. But the background of the case, how the person got into trouble, how the problem developed, because that, I think, is going to reach people better than just saying, don't do this or that. Because I've noticed over the years, when people bring up different practices or different things that they've dabbled in, they don't really respond well to, you shouldn't do that. Versus when we hear a story of something that happened to somebody else, maybe it you know, works a little bit better and gets through to us.
Well, I know, Adam, in the book, you address things like, you know, how engaging in mind control, ghost hunting, things like that, flirting with evil. It seems like there's a real obsession with a lot of that stuff on the part of so many people today, getting into, you know, exposing themselves to some real dangers. I, for one, I would have no interest in getting close to any of that. And you know, but you yourself, you know, you're this is, you get find yourself in the midst of this so often. Talk about, just real quickly here, you know, give our listeners a snapshot of how it is that the Lord called you, a layman, to be involved in this work, and, you know, how that has impacted your life since you've been involved with it.
Well, Jerry, I got drawn into this in about 2005, 2006, because I was curious whether any of these strange experiences people would report were real or if they were mental illness or just something with the brain. And I started by kind of looking more psychologically at cases for the Pittsburgh Diocese and a few other dioceses, but I quickly bumped into an actually possessed person and realized that none of the psychological techniques that I knew made it make sense, nor had any impact on what seemed to be that possessing spirit. And so when I realized it was a real spiritual phenomenon, I figured, well, then you either devote your life to that or you try to live and pretend it's not out there. And so I decided to go down that road, and the Lord's been opening doors. I work full-time for the church, have for many years, helped different bishops across the country, teach workshops at seminaries, help train exorcists. And if anything, it's accelerating, Jerry, which is strange. I would think as a layperson, maybe the Lord used me to help, you know, bring the ministry back over these last 15 years, because we had very few exorcists, but it seems that he still has more work for me to do, so I'm just going to be obedient as long as I can.
Evil is spreading so much in the world today. Do you find there's an increasing need for, say, exorcists or, you know, the sort of pastoral care of people who are finding themselves either, you know, maybe not possessed but oppressed or, you know, demonic influences in their lives? Is there an increasing need for these kinds of pastoral services in the church and in the world today?
I believe so, and I say that based on the number of bishops that have asked us to help train their priests that are becoming exorcists, and that seems to be increasing in the last few years. There's certainly been an uptick in general over the last 15 years, and the USCCB has even, you know, recognized that back in 2011, I believe. They had a special session on exorcism. So, you know, there's, in this generation, there's an increase, and I think that's not about evil getting stronger. That's about people are less religious, and they're dabbling in the occult and in the New Age because they still have a need for spiritual experiences in life, and they're not getting it in church anymore. So they're dabbling with things that purport to offer spiritual fulfillment and relief and everything else, but these systems are not based on Jesus Christ. They're not based on any real religious foundation. They're usually more of a, I think I'm a good person, and so I'm wonderful, and the universe loves me, and kind of I'll get whatever I wish for. It's a very kind of hedonistic approach in the New Age. And so I think what we're seeing is these demons are real. They've always been real. They're recognized by every world religion, though we have the full understanding of them through the Catholic faith and through Jesus. And people are basically falling to various tricks of the demonic, and unfortunately that's why we're seeing more cases.
For our Take Two family, normally we are live and it's a call-in show, but this is a pre-recorded program with our guest Adam Bly, so please just sit and listen and learn, because that's why we're doing this program today. In the book, I know you talk about it in the book, the key signs of diabolic possession and how they differ from those of oppression, and Jerry touched upon it. Tell us the difference between possession and oppression and the other levels of demonic activity so we can understand it, so we just don't automatically say, oh, that person is possessed.
To understand this, we have to remember that the church looks at this phenomenon because people are approaching the church and saying, I think I need an exorcism, or I've got some kind of problem, please help me. And then the church says, okay, we're going to discern, we're going to figure out, not discern in the charismatic sense, but discern in the rational sense. We're going to try to figure out what this problem is. We don't just do exorcisms because people tell us to. And that's the way the law of the church is. So the church is looking at people that are requesting help. There could be people out there in the world that are willfully engaged with the demonic that aren't requesting help, that could be possessed and not show these signs openly out in the public because they're cooperating with that spirit. So we're kind of looking at a subset of people that are in distress, and they're approaching the church. And then the church says, well, there's kind of four classic signs that we would need to document some of these before we have what's called moral certainty that the person's actually possessed. It's not enough that a person growls or says, you know, I'm hearing voices, because that's often schizophrenia. But the four classic signs are knowledge of all languages, and so, you know, either speaking or understanding languages the person doesn't know. And generally, we do a number of them when we do that test, not just one, because somebody may have picked up a little bit of a language along the way. The second one would be reacting to the holy or knowing what's holy. So you could put 8 bottles of water on the table. One of them has been blessed. The person every single time will pick out the one that's blessed and say, that one's hot, I don't want to touch it. Spiritually hot, not temperature. And you can do that with many other things, but basically knowing what's holy and being repelled by it. The third one would be knowledge of hidden things. And this is what you see in the movies when the demon says, oh, I know your sins, you know, you shouldn't be here, we know what you did last summer, kind of thing. And an important caveat there is the devil can't bring up any sin that's been confessed. Confession is incredibly important. And it basically takes it off the table. It's either removed from his memory or God doesn't allow him to bring it up, but basically it's gone. So knowing hidden things, sometimes it's sins and sometimes it's just normal hidden things that person couldn't possibly know. And then the fourth one is strength beyond their state in life physically. So you know, a person who's not a big bodybuilder, just a regular, you know, middle-aged person, has the strength to throw five men around the room for the, you know, the hours that are going on, and have just tremendous strength. And it's not just a burst of adrenaline, but hours later they're still going and everybody else is exhausted and they're showing no signs of tiring. And so those are the kind of the four signs. The most common one we use is the languages. And then usually the demon will tip its hand and show hidden knowledge to us kind of along the way.
Adam Bly with us on Take Two with Jerry and Debbie here on EWTN Radio. Our thanks to Ace McKay, our producer, for putting this pre-recorded segment of this program together for us. Adam has a new book coming out in September. It's called The Exorcism Files, True Stories of Demonic Possession. Adam is a paritus, an expert in religious demonology, works for the Diocese of Pittsburgh, has been involved in many, many solemn exorcisms, and in fact trains priests in the Church's rite of exorcism. And I know there are a lot of things, Adam, that people do and we can do and engage in that we don't really maybe realize we're setting ourselves up for possible, evil to enter into our lives, dabbling in the occult and things like this. What are some trends today that you see? I know there's a lot of things with young people going on where they don't really realize the danger they're putting themselves in. How real are some of these things and the dangers that they present?
The biggest thing that I'm seeing, Jerry, is it's kind of an extension of the paranormal TV craze that's still going all these years later, and that is some of the YouTube-based shows, which is really where kids watch TV more now than anything else. They watch YouTube on their phones. There's a lot of these kind of young groups of people that are going around to famously haunted places, and they're doing the typical ghost hunting things, but they're now becoming very, very dark. They're specifically looking for demonic spirits. They're looking to be scratched. They're looking for, you know, scary growling sounds, things that just are more demonic and more terrifying to people because it gets them more views. And the big problem with ghost hunting, you know, to sum it up quickly, is number one, necromancy is forbidden by God. And in the Bible, it says God finds that abhorrent, and that means calling up the dead to try to talk to them. So when you say, give me a sign of your presence, by definition, you're doing necromancy. And you might say, well, it's not in the Ten Commandments, but it actually is. The first commandment says you put God first and you love God completely. And when you're turning to a spirit other than God, you're telling God, I don't trust you. I'm not going to wait on you. I want comfort about the afterlife from this other spirit. And I'm going to start asking it questions and get guidance from it in some way. And so you've broken your friendship with God and you've started a friendship with this deceptive spirit. That's not going to be a saint. It's not going to be a poor soul in purgatory. Doesn't make sense for a saint or a poor soul to draw you into mortal sin. And so basically these ghost hunters are playing with demons that often will pretend to be dead people, and they're forming a relationship with them. And I can tell you, you know, we don't have time for all the details, but I know a lot of the paranormal celebrities personally from knowing them over the years, and a lot of them have had bouts of serious trouble in their lives from doing this kind of work, but TV doesn't show you that part. So basically, Jerry, I would say the biggest trend right now that young people don't understand is that ghost hunting isn't safe, and trying to find demons and ask for demonic manifestations, which is how dark it's getting, obviously is not good.
So you're saying you choose that action to go down that road. You're choosing the consequences as well, Adam, which is that's not good. So yeah, that's a problem. Adam, you know, a lot of people say, well, I have holy water, you know, that can help the sacramentals, you know, blessed salt. Some are saying it has to be exercised, holy water and salt. Tell us what do we need to kind of, to add that protection. Okay, with the sacramentals, and you also talk about the sacraments of the Catholic Church and how that also is a great, tremendous help in keeping the demons at bay. Tell us a little bit more about that, because I know people, after hearing you and listening to you, they're going to say, well, what can we do? We want to protect ourselves from all this.
Right, right. And so we have passively absorbed a lot of Protestant theology into our understanding of deliverance work in the Catholic Church, because really for a generation or two, we weren't doing much of it, and the Protestants were writing the books. And because of that, we tend to say, I want the dramatic prayer, I want the the talisman that's, you know, this thing here, this is going to protect me, or I need that person with that gift to pray over me, that's going to save me. Whereas as Catholics, the foundation of deliverance for us is in the sacraments. It's in confession and the Mass. And those two free more people of far more problems than anything else. But because the Protestants don't have those sacraments, or they have some limited version of the Mass in some cases, we've kind of adopted that idea that I need the talisman, you know, almost like a magical talisman. This thing here is going to protect me. And that's kind of a disordered idea, because you can put too much faith in an object versus in your relationship with God, which is what is built in the sacramental life. Now, I'm not saying holy water isn't good. It is good. But it should be an adjunct that is added after you have the foundation of confession and the Mass. And, you know, I'm presuming baptism, confirmation there, or at least baptism. Those are far more powerful and important. And then on top of that, you can use your holy water, your other sacramentals, and you should have those in your life. They should be reminders to you all the time. But remember what the Catechism tells us about sacramentals. They are meant to prepare us for sacraments. They're not an end unto themselves. And that theology, I think, is lost a lot of times. We get kind of wrapped up in the drama of sacramentals, but they need to point towards the sacrament.
This should come as no surprise to us, I guess, Adam, but I'd love to have you maybe just to expound upon it just briefly. In your book, you talk about why the devil most intently attacks priests, priestly vocations, religious vocations. Again, it shouldn't be any surprise, but talk about that hatred that, I guess, you know, that the devil and the demons have for priests and religious.
Well, sure, of course. I mean, if you think of the world as a spiritual chessboard, the priests are equipped to move in different ways on the board than anybody else is, and the religious are called to a particular charism of prayer and deep prayer. Not that we, you know, we all can pray deeply, but they're called to a different level of prayer, the divine office and sometimes contemplative prayer. And so particularly priests are a major target. You know, there's a surprising number of cases that we deal with where possession cases where the person says, I had a vocation when I was younger. And that happens a lot. And the devil sets traps for them in their life, and they have fallen to some of these traps, and they've ended up spending decades in some cases wandering in life. And then they'll finally be freed, and they'll say, you know, I had a yearning for God. I had a yearning to be a priest or to be a religious. When I was young, I got derailed by this occult stuff or this particular sin that was really, really deep and severe, and I got distracted. And then they'll say when they're finally freed, I still have that yearning for God, but sometimes it's a little late. And so the devil puts a lot of effort into derailing vocations and attacking, you know, the prayer for vocations in the world, because the priest is his biggest threat. You know, the demon, when a priest has permission from the bishop, he has that apostolic authority lent to him in this circumstance of doing exorcisms, it's a game changer, Jerry. The demon suddenly, you know, the priest says, in the name of Jesus, sit down and be quiet till I tell you to talk, and it'll sit down and look at him and be silent. It's an absolute game changer, but that authority Jesus gave to the apostles, and the church, by her laws, wisely limits that authority to priests. And so, you know, if the one person in the world that can completely dominate you and control you and bring you to a screeching halt is a priest, of course that's going to be your biggest target.
So the priests, with their bishop's permission, should be the only ones performing the old solemn rite of exorcism, correct? Okay, so with that...
Right.
The Protestant churches, the Protestant pastors, are they coming to the Catholic Church and to our priests for help with possessions and things and people that are oppressed, things of that nature? Because where do they have the ability to fully grasp what's happening, or is it just a partial kind of understanding of it?
You know, what I see is I do get calls from Protestant ministers seeking to consult when they come across a possession case. Generally, if they come across a full-blown possession, and that's a rare thing, but if they come across it, generally the deliverance methods that they use agitate the spirit and make it angry, but don't cast it out because they don't have that apostolic authority to compel the demon to obey them. And I don't say this lightly, and I'm not picking on Protestants or putting people down. I was a speaker at a big Protestant conference called Q Ideas for 2 years, and I spoke there about these issues and not being mean or anything about it, just sharing what we see. And I had a number of Protestant ministers, and these are big megachurch pastors or ministers that had a lot of experience for the most part, that approached me privately and said, thank you for saying what you said. The one told me, I came across a full possession. I tried to deal with it, and he said, I lost 2 years of my life. And I didn't ask him what he meant by that, but, you know, whatever the fallout was, wasn't good. And so usually, when they come across a full-blown case, usually they end up referring it to the Catholic Church because we just have that reputation of dealing with this. You know, some people, it's because of the movies they've seen, and but a lot of people, I think, have a intuitive feel that the bishop is really where that authority lies.
Wanted to share with our Take Two family, Call to Communion with Dr. David Anders, Monday through Saturday afternoon, 2 Eastern Time, and it encores in the evenings at 11 Eastern Time on EWTN Radio. What's stopping you from becoming a Catholic? Dr. David Anders has the answer. Well, all of the answers, actually. He does such a fine job. That man is so brilliant. You got to listen to this show, Call to Communion with Dr. David Anders.
Adam Bly with us here for a few minutes here on Take Two with Jerry and Debbie. We so appreciate your time, Adam. He is the author of a number of books, his latest coming out in September, The Exorcism Files, True Stories of Demonic Possession. It has been a fascinating and enlightening conversation. And Adam, I know that we've talked about this before, and you're very, very big on assuring people that, you know, if we live in a state of grace, live the sacramental life, have a life of prayer, there's no need to be fearful, even though, you know, evil is all around us. The devil is real. Like you said earlier, demons are real. They want to take us to hell. They will do everything they can to accomplish that, but it's not something, we don't need to live our lives in fear. Talk a little bit about how just remaining centered in Christ and the life that he has for us is a reason for not falling into fear or despair.
This topic is kind of like talking about bacteria. You never think about bacteria, that it's everywhere and that some of it's dangerous and, you know, you can get sick from it. But when you learn about it in life and then you realize, like, oh my gosh, everything's covered in bacteria, and having the pandemic just now, you know, we're all kind of mindful of that, viruses and bacteria. It's kind of like that. It's this invisible thing. It can be a problem, but you kind of realize it's always been there. It's always, you know, all over everything. And these spirits are the same way. They've always been with humanity. They've been tempting you your whole life. That's their ordinary activity. And that's what Jesus allows them to do. They're not doing anything that Jesus hasn't given permission for them to do. If you look at the book of Job, it's spelled out clearly. God has to give them permission for how far they go with things. The people that get in this kind of extraordinary trouble, Jerry, are people that are playing with black magic. They're going deep into Reiki. They're going deep into weird energy healing systems, manipulating energy. They're playing with witchcraft and Satanism. You know, people are going really deep into this stuff by the time they get possessed. The average person is never going to encounter it. And certainly if you're living a sacramental life and living in a state of grace, and we all know that means you don't violate the Ten Commandments, you know, willfully, you have nothing to worry about. So, you know, be at peace about that. This is kind of, we're talking about an extraordinary thing that the church does address, but the regular healthy Catholic life, you don't have to worry about this really at all.
So, Adam, you go to a party or a shower or wedding celebration or something like that, and they have tarot card reading or, you know, something of that nature, and you think, oh, I'm just, you know, it's just fun. I'm just dabbling. But, you know, we talked about that. You make these choices. There's consequences attached to that, you know, based on what could happen. What should the average person that kind of just maybe, I don't even want to use the word dabble in it, but just gets some kind of exposure to things like yoga and Reiki and Ouija boards and stuff like that, best way to remedy that, go to confession? Tell us.
Yeah, you really do need to go to confession, because any form of divination, which tarot cards is a form of divination, is seeking to know the future. And Scripture tells us that we are to trust in the providence of God. We are not to seek knowledge of the future, which only God the Father knows. So you're kind of appealing to spirits for lies or partial lies about the future, where they're just going to go manufacture the thing they predict and make it seem like they knew the future. But you have stepped into, again, a roundabout violation of the first commandment, because you're telling God, I don't trust you. I want hidden information about my future from this other spirit. And God's not going to speak through those tarot cards because he forbids divination in the Bible.
Excellent, Adam. We know you have a lot of things to be on your way to do today, so we thank you for your time on this interview. I want to point people to your website if they have further interest in learning of your work and the things that you do. It is religiousdemonology.com. Adam Bly, religiousdemonology.com. I know it's on Amazon and perhaps other places as well. The Exorcism Files, True Stories of Demonic Possession, coming out this September by Adam Bly. Adam, thank you so much for your time today. We appreciate it. It's always great to get caught up with you, especially have you on our program. Thank you so much for all that you're doing.
Oh, and thank you, guys, and God bless your listeners.
We sure hope the Take Two family really appreciated this pre-recorded broadcast. We'll have another show planned for you tomorrow, and until then, have a beautiful and blessed day. We ask St. Joseph, please pray for all of us.